This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
If you're going to talk basketball, why not talk basketball with somebody that embodies it here in the state of Minnesota? Head coach of De La Salle when they won six straight state championships. Now an assistant coach at Colorado State. We welcome to the program to break down the brackets and much more in terms of what's going on with him. Dave Thorson. David, how are you tonight?
So
did we lose him?
You're so kind to say those nice things. I always say all those players, they overcame the coaching at De La Salle, actually.
That was quite a run, though. I mean, when you look back now, and you don't have a chance to look back very often because you're so busy, but what do you think about?
You know, it's all about relationships for me, Mike. Anyone that knows me knows how much I value those relationships. And I'll tell you, when those guys that are playing in the NCAA tournament, you know, this year when their teams were called, I couldn't have been more happy for them and couldn't have been more proud of them for the work that they put in. You know, I put it on my Twitter. I said, those guys were working when no one was watching, and now everyone will be able to watch them. So I couldn't be a prouder of Gino and Reed and Sakar and Gabe and Jarvis. I'm just so excited for all of them.
Jarvis Johnson went through the University of Minnesota and never played, and he's been on the team the whole time because of his heart condition. Who is he, and explain what kept him there?
Well, you know, long story short, Jarvis had a heart condition that just would not allow him. At the end of the day, the University of Minnesota had to make a very difficult decision. And it's a long, you know, that's a whole other conversation. But what I'm so proud of Jarvis is that, you know, he continued to contribute to that team. And, you know, if you were to listen to Richard Pitino's comments on senior day about how valuable was Jarvis to helping their team this year, I'm just so thrilled for him, excited that he's going to be graduating here this spring. And, you know, he's talking about coaching. So he'll be a guy I consider some point if I can ever hire an assistant coach, because he'd be awesome.
What was it like at Colorado State this season?
You know, it's a great university. It's a lot like the University of Minnesota, Mike, actually, 33,000 students. And I'm looking at the Rocky Mountains right now from my office. Campus is literally 5 minutes from just spectacular geography. You know, we inherited a tough situation. You know, that happens sometimes in this business, but we're excited. We had two freshmen starting this year that we think are great. And obviously, I couldn't be more thrilled to have David Roddy coming here to play for the Rams. So we're excited about the future.
David Roddy put up 36 the other night against North. They got beat, but he's obviously a great quarterback and a great basketball player, and you've seen him for a long time. Tell me about him. What did you see? He's a power forward, almost looks like Charles Barkley playing high school basketball.
You know, what we like about him is he's a positionless guy. He's got a great skill set for someone that looks like a post player. He's really a face-up guy. He hit three straight threes in that game in the first half on Friday. I happened to be there along with Coach Medved. And, you know, we just are so thrilled to get a guy that's a competitor and that we consider positionless, meaning we can move him all over the floor, and whether it's facing the basket, making a great pass, hitting a three-pointer, you know, being physical in the lane. He can do all of those things.
So you see a lot of these teams. What do you see when you look at the brackets? What give us a couple pieces of advice for people filling out their brackets right now based on some of what you've seen?
Well, you know, I look at it through those defensive glasses.
Yeah.
So, you know, I like the teams that guard. But I'll tell you this, you know, teams that can play all tempos, teams that can, you know, run when they need to run and also can execute in a half court, you know, those are the teams that tend to be successful. And obviously you got to be able to guard. You got to be deep in situations, in tournaments like this, where if you get into foul trouble, you got to be able to withstand it. And so, you know, those teams that can guard, that can play at both the fast pace and the slow pace, and that I think, you know, are deep and can withstand foul trouble are teams that will advance to the second weekend and maybe to the Final Four.
What about a team like Nevada that's got a lot of seniors, and yet towards the end of the year it hasn't gone as well as they would like, but they've got the Twins and they've got a whole lot more?
Well, our league is an incredibly competitive league. The Mountain West Conference typically is sending, you know, multiple teams to the NCAA tournament. And so both Nevada and Utah State are very good teams. You know, San Diego State and Fresno State also had great years. Nevada's a positionless team, Mike. You know, they can play Jordan Caroline at the five, and he's a lot like Roddy. He's a positionless guy. You know, they're capable of scoring in bunches. They were a little bit banged up at the end of the season, and so that's where I think you saw them, you know, take a couple hits. But I think they'll create some problems for any team in the tournament. You know, Utah State, Craig Smith, who was at South Dakota, has done a great job at Utah State. They've got a big guy on the inside that's a freshman that has made a difference. And so, I think both those teams can win a couple games in the tournament.
Do you teach defense the same way at Colorado State that you taught it at De La Salle, or is it different in the college game?
You know, the biggest difference at this level, especially in the Mountain West Conference, is that when you look at post players, you know, you've got potential NBA post players on almost every team. And so ball screen defense is a little bit more intricate than what it was at De La Salle. You know, we did a lot of switching and tried to pressure the ball all the time. It's a little bit different with a true five man. And so ball screen defense is different at this level than it is in high school.
But philosophically speaking, the three-pointer changes too. In high school they can shoot it at one level, in college they can shoot it a little bit better level. How does that change the game? And then the NBA is obviously the ultimate, but how does that change? You know, a lot of teams are set up for the three now.
You know, what it does, Mike, is it stretches your defense out on the backside, on the help side, as we like to call it. And, you know, especially those teams that can shoot from five positions, you know, we like to, Colorado State, you know, we even like to face our post players up or our inside guys. And what it does is it creates that spacing so that your offenses run smoother. And so that's a challenge for defenses. You know, another thing that you can do in high school is you can front the post all the time. But in the collegiate level, it's a little bit more difficult because you've got bigger players to front. You've also got to deal with the defense getting stretched out because your help side defense is trying to get to the backside of that post player and also get to a three-point shooter, which sometimes is very difficult.
So at the college level, could you see, I mean, in the way things are going, would 5'6", 5-inch guys athletic be the way to go, or what do you see?
Well, you know, it's happened some in the NBA where you have less of those, you know, true five men or true post players. If you think about how the Warriors play, and Cousins has changed that a little bit in that he's a little bit more like a true post player, but there's no question that this sort of positionless, seamless basketball is happening at a lot of places. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's hard to get those true five men that are dominant. And so, you know, even in our situation here at Colorado State, that's why we want guys that are multi-dimensional offensively, that can post up, but they can also face the basket and make plays. So no question, I think you see more of that in today's game.
Explain the international component to it. Are you constantly recruiting internationally, and how do you go about figuring out who's for real overseas?
You know, the beauty of what you do today in recruiting, Mike, is that film is just so much more readily accessible.
And it's so good now, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. You know, and so I literally can go on what's called Synergy and watch a lot of international players. We've got a 6'10 kid coming from New Zealand that we had, frankly, never seen play live, but had been able to watch lots of FIBA and international basketball so that we had a great handle of what he could do. We signed a guy, I found a guard last year in Australia that's at Drake. And although I did get to see him live because he was in the U.S., my first introduction to him was solely on videotape. So I'm turning stones all over the world trying to find the best players that we can get.
Last question. You obviously you accomplished everything you could at the high school level. Then you got in the college game and you found out real quick you went from Drake to Colorado State already. But is it more fulfilling? Is it what compared to coaching high school?
Well, you know, the relationships are a lot the same, you know, which I really like. We had a post player here this year, Nico Carvaccio, that led the country in rebounding. And I can tell you, I've just had a great time working with him. You know, recruiting is such a big part of what we do at this level that, you know, you got to do both essentially to be successful. And, you know, from a high school perspective, obviously my day job wasn't basketball at De La Salle. And although I love that place, I love the entire community. I can tell you that I don't complain that I just get to be a basketball coach now. And I'm lucky. I'm lucky that I'm able to do that. Very blessed.
Well, that is awesome. I hope I can run into you at the state tournament. Some of it will be dictated by when the Gophers play, etc. But we need to catch up, and I appreciate you very much.
Hey, Mike. As always, I'm a Minnesotan at heart. Love, especially Minnesota Prep basketball. I love it. Yeah. I'll be up there. I was there briefly last week, so can't wait to get back and watch the Minnesota State tournament and whatever I can do. Appreciate what you do too, Mike.
You bet. Dave Thorson, nice enough to join us. They might add a fellow Hamlin Piper doing great things. What is complicated, what is difficult about being a sports person that people rely on for intricate knowledge? What is hard about that job, you say? You know, sports, how hard can that be? I'll explain exactly what's difficult about it next. There are a couple things, only a couple. When you think about it in life, how lucky are you if you only have a couple things that are the downside to your job? I'm around people all the time that are of similar age, and they're at that point in their life where they're going, it ain't great, but it ain't bad enough, so I'm going to walk away and try and reinvent myself. So therefore, I'll just keep doing what I do, even though I don't love it. I don't hate it enough to leave, and I don't want to take the risk that there's something out there that I might fail at, because now I'm at that age where the kids are getting close to college or they're in college, and we just want to get to the finish line at some point in time here and make sure we got a good plan. And I get that. I feel sorry for those people, too, because I want life to be filled with something fresh. And I want every day, the day I die, I want to believe that the best is yet to come. And in my faith, I would believe the best is yet to come even when I do die. But I'm saying every day that I'm living, I want to believe that the best is yet to come. Mike Wallace, 60 Minutes correspondent for all those years, they asked him, he was almost 90, and they asked him about what is it that drives him as a reporter. And he said, it's that I really believe the next story is going to be my best story. You know, I think about that. The next story that I do is going to be my best story. It wasn't, hey, I've done everything that I can possibly do in this profession. It's that the next story might be my best story. Isn't that a great sense of purpose? We saw it the other day. Sid Hartman sat in here, age 99, and did the sports huddle yesterday. And I was out of his house on Friday, and it was just so wonderful. Part of it was we were sitting in his living room, and we were having this wonderful conversation because there were no distractions. There was no ambient noise. It was just he and I. He wasn't sitting here at the radio station worried about whether or not, you know, we were going to get a hold of P.J. Fleck, whatever it was. That day, he was just sitting there in a very casual, and obviously he was very comfortable because he's sitting there. And so while we sat there and went through all this, I realized what a precious human being he is, because he was relaxed, he was comfortable, we were able to have a real conversation about a lot of different things. And at age 99, let me tell you, folks, he still got his fastball. He might not hit it as far as he once did, or he might not throw it as hard as he once did, but he still got his fastball. There isn't anything out there that he's not keenly aware of, which is a great part of being Sid Hartman. Anyway, I digress. The reason that I say that is every day I watch these people and I say, at least the people that I know in this, as they grow old, they don't grow old. They just keep going. They don't look at it as growing old. They look at it as I'm going to give it everything I got today and whatever, you know, happens, happens. So one of the downsides of this job, there's only a couple of them, but one of them is, you need to feel like you're a sports expert all the time, right? So people come to me, and they want to know how to fill out their brackets, for example. I did a long spiel today on WCCOTV.com that I'm sure plays on it. and go through the whole brackets. They let me do one of those touchscreen deals. First time I've done this, where you go through and you explain why each one and why they're going to win. And you realize as you're doing this, but you don't want them to know, that you really don't know that much about what you're talking about. Because you really don't know that much about Utah State like Dave Thorson does because he coaches against them. You really don't know that much about Washington, although you know the conference is bad. You really don't know that much about Buffalo, although you know they're a chic team and they got some good players. They're fun to have in the NCAA tournament. So you go through this and you realize some people may actually be taking you seriously. And you feel like this obligation to feed the giant, like, man, I got to show that I know. But you really don't. I mean, how much do I know about how Syracuse is going to respond after Jim Boeheim had that unfortunate accident? I like Baylor. Why? Because I know a couple people. I know one of the players and one of the coaches at Baylor. That's what I know. I don't know anything about Virginia Tech. I don't know much about Montana, all those. But people expect that. So last year, I go down to cover the Final Four. And I'm with two people from WCCO-TV, Matt Liddy, Casey Kessel. And we go to the Final Four that day, two games, of course, back to back. And, I mean, the pageantry, everything is unbelievable. Down there, the River Walk, and the bands would come down on the boats, and they're playing, and everybody's pumped up and excited, et cetera. And then we get to the River Walk, and then you get over to the arena, and everything's jumping, and we walked right up on the floor before the game. Nobody stopped us. I don't know why. We were on the floor while they were warming up. Cool as heck. Loyola's there, blah, blah, blah. But the first game is being played. I believe that was Michigan and Loyola. And neither team is making shots. I mean, it is painful to watch because you know these are good teams and they can't make shots. You know they're really good teams. And so they're looking at me like, what's up here, right? What's going on that these teams can't make shots here? I thought they were supposed to be so good because these guys are both, you know, they're sports fans, but they don't follow it that, you know, that close until the tournament, et cetera. What's wrong with space? And their spatial relations are out of sort because it's hard to figure out how to shoot the basketball when you've got that much background behind you. And I said, it has nothing to do with how good they are. It's impossible for any team to shoot well when you're not used to playing in an arena this big. So don't expect as much because it's just, it's impossible. Even for these guys that are gifted, they're not good enough to compensate for playing in an arena this large and for trying to understand the spacing that goes into what a 20-footer looks like in a building with a backdrop that's on top of you versus this. And that was suffice, man. They were happy to have me with an expert like that that could give them that expertise and change their expectations because now they knew what the problem was. The real problem was the next game Villanova played, and I believe they made 9 of their first 10 shots from about 20 feet or better. I mean, they didn't miss. And my two colleagues just looked at me and said, so you're our sports expert, huh? Paul McDonald, Joel McDonald, all the McDonalds, Bob McDonald at the top of it, Mike McDonald has his team in the state basketball tournament. He's from that coaching tree, and he's next. Welcome back, Sports of the Max, News Talk 830 WCCO. State boys basketball tournament starts on Wednesday. And in Class 4A, we've got what we call the McDonald bracket. There are four teams in that bracket, and three of them have coaches from the same family. How about that? Eastridge High School, Hopkins High School, Cambridge Isanti High School. Bryce Tesdall, of course, the head coach that we had on the other night from Eastridge. Hopkins has an assistant coach with his brother on the team. And Cambridge Isanti will play Hopkins, and they are coached by Mike McDonald. And those would be his two nephews that are coaching on different teams in the same bracket. You know what, Mike? Your family never ceases to amaze me. Who else could get three coaches in the same bracket?
Yeah, exactly. It is kind of crazy to think about that, but there are three, and of course that's going to make it a little more interesting, I guess, Mike.
Do you talk to those too often?
Not a whole lot. I mean, in the coaching profession, it seems like you're just consumed by your own team and preparation for the next game, and beyond a few things that we see about each other on social media, maybe that's about as much as we see. I mean, we've been busy preparing, of course, for our state tournament appearance, and And that's been about it, Mike.
In the summertime, though, there's got to be a time when the McDonald clan gets together and you guys can just have fun and swap stories.
Yeah, there is that time. We spend a lot of time up north at our lake cabin, north of the hometown of Chisholm a little bit. And from time to time, the family can get together. And, of course, there's always some basketball talk. But, there's sometimes just for relaxation and being with family as well, Mike.
Take me back to when you played in the state tournament in the 70s at Williams Arena. And, of course, Chisholm came down the Blue Streaks, and we never thought we'd see anything like it, these guys with these long socks and crew cuts and everything else. What was that experience like for you as a player?
Well, it's very memorable to come down to Williams Arena. That was 1973, actually. And, you know, it was kind of different back then. When you'd walk into the arena as a player, you'd look at the outside. There are buses from all over the state, and you'd walk into Williams Arena, and for the most part, it was all filled. And, of course, Williams Arena is a great venue, and I remember, playing those games, the Melrose game, of course, in 1973, of course. And then after that, we shifted to 1974 at the old St. Paul Civic Center, and then 1975 back to the Civic Center as well. But all of those experiences, even though a long time ago, were memorable, and wouldn't trade them for anything.
You know, having coached and seen a lot of them come along, where does Mark Oberding rank in all of that?
Honestly, playing against him, I played against him in the semifinal in 1974, and all I remember is how massive he was. As a high school player, I grew up playing against Kevin McHale and Pat Foshee out of Virginia. But honestly, playing against Oberding in the state tournament, I thought he was the best player I ever played against just because he was so massive. I remember him getting a rebound, and basically you kind of took a step back and said, well, that's his. There's nothing much you can do about that.
Well, what would you do to try to negate a guy like that? Because he was, it's like having Shaq out there.
Yeah, I think what you basically do is try to pressure their guards. I think that's a major thing you'd probably do if you're dealing with size, is hopefully you can do something with the guard play, and of course make the big guy run. Whether you're pressuring guards, maybe make him try to help out against your pressure, which takes him away from the basket, kind of negates him there. There's not a whole lot you can do sometimes when somebody's established down low, so it might have to happen on the perimeter.
Cambridge Isani is a 4A school. You're probably one of the smaller enrollment-wise members of 4A, huh?
I think we're sitting, I think somebody checked this the other day, I think it was told, we're sitting at number 56 out of 63. So, yeah, we are one of the smallest 4A schools, and I think of all the entries, by far, we're probably one of the smallest.
Now, explain what happened with your team, because you got better at the end of the year there and kind of caught fire.
We did. We started really well. I mean, we in December, we lost our first two, kind of woke us up a little bit. Then we went on a nice win streak throughout December into early January. And then we kind of sputtered a little bit and looked to find ourselves again. But really, I think, we upgraded our schedule this year. We decided we played Wayzata, Edina, and Eden Prairie all on the road this past year. And I think that kind of gave us, even though sometimes they were tough games for us to play against, it kind of gave us that experience of playing against top 4A teams that maybe sometimes we didn't have in previous seasons. And I think that kind of prepared us for the tournament run. And I think, we really didn't feel like we had a whole lot of fear. We knew we had to play well in order to advance, but we really didn't have any fear.
Is it hard or difficult to get to schedule? We see that more often now where, Eden Prairie comes in with 9 losses, and I don't think they care at all because they're going to go play the best schedule. They barely beat you guys by 3, et cetera. Is it hard for you to schedule and get games with the teams you want to get? Or how does that work?
It is because, we're kind of locked in with our conference play. We're in the Mississippi 8 Conference, so that locks us in. This past year was 13 games. We played my brother's holiday tournament up in Hibbing, which is a fairly good tournament. We beat Chanhassen, a decent 4A team, in the final up there. And then we tried to just supplement. And for whatever reason, I think actually, we had played, this is the third year we had played Edina, and so we had played them 3 years in a row. So that was one. The other two actually knew that we had a pretty good group of underclassmen back, and actually they were the ones that reached out to me, both Eden Prairie and Wayzata in the off season. And I think it's more them maybe being the Lake Conference, which is, was a smaller conference. They're always looking for non-conference games. And we knew we had a pretty good team back and thought, why not? Why not, you know, try to upgrade our schedule a little bit, give us that seasoning a little bit, which I think paid off in our postseason right now.
How many years for you at Cambridge?
This is my 32nd.
Oh, I've wow.
Yeah, I've been there quite a while. Got to Cambridge in the fall of 1987 and have been coaching basketball ever since. Before that, I was a head coach for 4 years out in South Dakota, so assistant year 1 year out there, and then a couple other years as assistant coaches as well. So it's been a while, but, you know, time flies, Mike.
Man does it, Michael.
Yep. You know, I keep telling myself, you're as old as you feel or you're as young as I feel. And I still enjoy what I'm doing. Still enjoy coaching basketball. You know, passion's still there. I don't think I'm going to go to age 80 like my dad did, but, you know, right now I feel pretty good about coaching.
Last, your dad, of course, the all-time winningest coach. Is there a lot of you in him?
Or
a lot of him
so.
And you, I mean?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we do things differently. But, you know, we are just a product of him. All of us within the McDonald family are probably a product of him. And, I mean, he instilled in us, if nothing else, a great love for the game. And, you know, all my kids right now, and my oldest son, Red, is the head coach at Duluth East. My daughter, Kaylee, is assistant coach at Duluth East. And my son, Kyle, is just he'll be graduating next year. And, of course, you know, his career path is another coach down the line. So, and it's just what we do. I wouldn't want to do anything else. It's just a great game and love the people we work with and love the kids we coach and things like that.
And you guys have been good to basketball as well. Last question, Princeton's in your conference, and I hear that they're offensively unbelievable statistically. What do they do? Just get up and down all for 38 minutes?
They do, and they're very experienced. I mean, they have multiple ways to score. They've got a big kid, John Stimler, inside. Of course, it gives them some inside power. And they have James Fleecheck, their point guard, who was out a good part of the February. He's back now, I guess, had a knee injury. And then they have a Williams kid and an O'Neal kid on the perimeter that can knock down shots as well. So they're very balanced. And, yeah, they have multiple ways to score. We lost twice to them this past season. Both games I thought we could have won with a little bit better play. But they'll be, I think, I see they have a tough round in the first one being in the 4-5 game. But I think they could have the option, the opportunity, I should say, of moving on and doing well in Class 3A.
For sure. Hey, Mike, appreciate it very much. Thank you so
you
much.
Bet.
Congratulations on another state tournament. And always fun to run into the McDonald family when it's state tournament time.
Yeah, we'll look forward to seeing you, Michael. Please see you there, and looking forward to the tournament.
You bet. Mike McDonald, head coach at Cambridge Isani, like I said. So he's going to coach Cambridge Isani against Hopkins, where his nephew's a coach. Then the next game is going to be Eastridge against Eastview, and Eastridge is coached by his other nephew, Bryce Tesdall. Eastview is the only one in the bracket that I don't think has a McDonald relation in it. Bob is something, man. Bob was the guy that coached them. And he's the father. He's the dean. He's the one that coached Joel Maturin, has all those wins. And back in the day, he was probably the only one, because back in the 70s, 80s, 90s, well, really to this day, kids wear their hair any way that they want. Unless you play basketball for Chisholm. Because if you play basketball for Chisholm, the two things you need to know, those socks are going to be wore high, Bob McDonald's coaching, and you're going to have a crew cut. Your ears are going to show completely. That's just the way it is. And it was for the entirety of his career. And Mike McDonald was part of it, and Paul McDonald, his brother, was part of it, and Joel McDonald and Tom McDonald, all of them played for him. And all of them, I don't know for sure, but they might all be over 1,000 points. They could play the game. And then they got into it back in the 70s, where you had the McDonalds and Chisholm outstanding, and just down the road you had Hibbing, who was outstanding with Kevin McHale. And so you'd have these two teams that, in proximity, you could walk from one to the other almost. They're that close. They're almost adjoining towns. In fact, Joel McDonald is now the coach at Hibbing High School. And this was well before my time, but I just hear the stories about how Chisholm High School, where it's a gymnasium you need to visit if you're up in that area. and how when Hibbing played at Chisholm, man, you better get there early, and they'd hang over. There's a big around the upper level. There's seating, and I mean upper level, almost like a theater up high. You know, like if you were at the orchestra or the something like that. You know how certain people can sit in those booths up high, whatever they call them. I don't know. I've never been invited to one, but I've seen them on TV. You know, they sit up there and they watch the opera. That's what it is, the opera. Well, that's kind of what they got is opera seating up there, only it extends along the whole length of the court. And you think, what would it be like to have to get there an hour and a half, 2 hours before the game, or an hour before the B game even, just to watch a game? But that's the beauty of small-town Minnesota, man. When you got a couple of good basketball teams, in the outstate especially, it's unbelievable. But you look at the other night, you know, they can talk all they want about hockey this, hockey that. Eden Prairie plays at Prior Lake in the section finals. The thing is sold out, I don't know, days in advance. And we had the video on there. I mean, I don't know how you could have stuck another person in there. I hope the fire marshal was on vacation, because that baby was so packed and standing room only is an understatement. And it's the same thing when Apple Valley played with the Jones boys. And you try to get to a game there when they're rolling and they're playing Lakeville North or one of those good teams. You can't get in. Now, I know I'm going to get arguments on this. I know people are going to email me. I know they're going to text me. I know they're going to do all these things. And they're going to write things, bad things about me. You can get into any hockey game you want during the year. But you try getting into a marquee matchup for basketball and it holds it roughly the same, maybe even more people. Good luck when you get the right one. Because this is a basketball crazy state, and we live in denial on it, and we hide, we make it look like it's a hockey. Hockey's only offered about half the schools. That means every school in the state has basketball. That means every school in the state has a fan base of basketball fans. We are basketball crazy. We just aren't as good at it relative to the national scene, because the national scene is so, as I pointed out earlier, it's hard to be good in basketball. Minnesota is not going to be as good as the top five players in Texas or California in basketball. We can in hockey, but we're probably not going to be in basketball or New York or Pennsylvania, whatever, Illinois. We got some really good basketball players, but we're probably not going to be as good as some of them. But that doesn't mean we're not basketball crazy. We love to play the sport. We love to watch the sport. And it's easy to say it's a hockey state for different reasons, but let me just tell you something to prove this point a little bit further. If the Gopher, what do you think they'd draw if the Gopher basketball team played at Target Center and they were playing in a game to go to the Final Four? Let's just say by chance next week they're playing the region, it would be a game to go to the Final Four. How hot would that ticket be? Okay, come up with a number. Visualize this in your mind. Okay, now a few years ago, the Gophers played North Dakota, their arch rival, to go to the Frozen Four in hockey. Are you with me here? Are you hearing me? Are you feeling me on this? So the Gophers are playing North Dakota, their arch rival. We talk about the historic rivalry with North Dakota and Minnesota. At the XL Energy Center, they did not even sell tickets for the upper bowl because they didn't need to. North Dakota against Minnesota to go to the Frozen Four. How would that have looked if it was the Gophers against Iowa or Wisconsin to go to the Final Four in basketball? What would the ticket demand be like? Think they could sell those arenas out? My point made again. Why do I do this, man? Why is it I even need to go down these roads? Because I want to make it simple for you people. That's why. I want you to really understand where you live and the vibrancy of this community and where you what it's really like to be a part of Minnesota. And it's my pleasure to do that for you every night. Speaking of which, I'm going to bring Henry Lake in. And I think he will further validate my point. He's next. All right, Henry Lake, let's get to this. Brackets are coming out. You've been perusing your – I haven't seen you. You've been fine-tooth combing these things. I really like Minnesota's matchup.
I think you can flip a coin with this one. And the reason why I say you can flip a coin with the matchup, and I do, I
in 7-10s, usually you can kind of flip a coin in these days.
Well, I did go ahead and I have Minnesota as my pick for that particular matchup. But the reason why it can go either way is just because when I look at the way that defensively we have struggled at times, I just, especially that Michigan game, I'm like, man, what happened there? Like,
do you say they're tired legs? You give them that one?
Rated
off as, you know, doesn't
count? A little
count?
Bit. A little bit. We have you know this about the Gophers. We don't have any depth. Like, in terms of that rotation, it's short. And no Curry.
No point guard.
It's really short. Exactly.
Is Isaiah Washington still on the team?
Well, he got in when it was out of hand.
By the way, after the season, he might go somewhere else. But yeah, that could be an writing issue. Looks like on the wall. But
if they have a situation where defensively they struggled to the degree that they did on Saturday, and the biggest thing, that game was lost. Let's be honest, they had that almost 6 minute stretch where they couldn't score,
and that happens to them sometimes.
Exactly. So whenever that happens, it doesn't matter who you face in the NCAA tournament, you're done.
So. Tell me, when I look at the brackets on the other side, not in the, I think it's the West, doesn't matter. I'm all over Michigan to win that thing. Gonzaga is the number one. Why would Michigan not win that?
I am not somebody that's really big on Michigan.
How come?
When I look at Texas Tech in that part of the bracket, I like how defensively, how good they are.
You think they can shut them down?
I think they could beat Michigan. Yeah, I definitely think they could beat Michigan. Michigan is – they can be shaky offensively. They can be. Like, they take a lot of threes.
But if they're not, it's over, man. If they're making, it's over. You can't do anything. And they play intense defense.
Yep. But the thing
Gonzaga, to me, could be fool's gold.
But the thing about – and they could be – the sleeper team in that region that we'll talk about a little bit, because each hour I'm going to get into a specific region. But in the West, I think Florida State is a team that can.
Ooh, I tell you what,
that could cause some damage.
Duke got them pretty good, but as you watched the game, you said this Florida State team you don't want to play.
Yep, but this is the issue. Just to finish my answer about your question about Michigan. The thing about Michigan is they take a lot of threes, right? We agree on that. Their bigs take threes.
Yep.
So when their bigs take threes, who's rebounding?
Yeah, they don't care though.
That could be that could be an issue.
So you fall behind. You make it and you win or not.
Yep. Yep.
You know. Yep. I'm going to give you another sleeper here.
Okay.
And
all right, give me one.
I don't think anybody's talking about because it'd be Purdue. I think they're a good team that Minnesota matches up well with, and Carson Edwards we talked about last week. They got fresh legs. They only played one game.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that they've got an inside outside. They're one of those that could rattle off three, and it wouldn't surprise me.
They're tough, but I got them going out early.
How early?
Second game.
Second game to who?
To Villanova.
Well, you know, Jay Wright's hard to bet against, obviously.
And the main reason why I have that be the case is because I just think that they rely on Carson Edwards so much that it's not going to be a one-man show, not against a Villanova-type team.
Okay.
This is not happening.
Do you think Wisconsin has a chance?
To do damage?
Yeah.
No.
How far you got them going?
I only have them going. See, you want me to give me the whole bracket already on the show? Put it like this. I got them winning a game.
Okay. I'm hoping they get to Virginia is why I say that. Because Tony Bennett and his dad coached at Wisconsin.
Oh, you like the storylines.
Like the storyline. Obviously, you got the Patino storyline going.
And we'll get to that, too. Yeah.
I didn't realize that Patino, you know, with Rick being out of coaching this summer, he could be around offering a few tips.
Hold on. Don't you think he's going to be in Des Moines?
Well, he's in Greece right now, so that'd be
but is their season over with already?
I don't know. I can't figure that out, but I know he was in Greece on Sunday.
Yep.
Maybe he likes Greece. I thought their season was over too.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, why is he not back here? I don't know how that works.
He might be sitting next to you.
He might have a mustache on and a fake, and he might be talking into a little microphone that goes right into Richard's ear, right? Since he recruited some of these players. What do you think?
Oh, man.
So you can break it down next,
absolutely.
Right?
Yes, we'll do that. And Chris Broussard from Fox Sports 1 will join me at 9:30.
Henry's all over it. Get your brackets out next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.